my name is John. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. I was born in Detroit, Michigan, and in a very successful family, but a very crazy family. I fell in love with alcohol at a very young age. I was a teenage alcoholic and a teenage drug addict. I was first introduced to AA in 1967. And they didn't know what to do with young people at that time. So they would just put us in the judge's chambers, and we had our own little meeting because we couldn't meet with the parents because we went to the school with the kids that the parents were going to meetings with. So that was sort of strange. But I loved alcohol. I loved what it did for me. I knew I had a habit the very first time I drank it. It was a miracle drug. And AA, when I was introduced to AA, it was actually kinder than the family that I came from. But I knew I had an obsession of mine. I just couldn't stay sober. So years went by, and during my high school years, it was a pandemic of heroin came through our high schools, and I was also addicted to opiates and heroin. And it was a pandemic. It was just during the Vietnam 60s. It was like party time from like 67. I don't even think it died out until like 1978. So it was just a constant party of drugs and alcohol. And certain drugs, if you didn't have, you got very ill. And so I went through, you know, that scene for a while. I was in many rehabs as a young teenager, a young adult. And then finally, I was like in a little, when I turned 18, I got sent to a prison camp outside the prison. And they were just starting to recognize that there's a alcohol and drug problem throughout the United States. And I was in the infirmary there because I was so out of it, you know. And they came up to me and asked me if I wanted to go to Sacred Heart Rehabilitation Center. And I was so jacked up. I thought, wow, yeah, that's where those priests make all that wine, you know. And so the sheriff was driving me downtown Detroit, and I saw the winery. I go, hey, aren't we going there? He goes, no, you're not going to the winery. We're just going to Sacred Heart. It's like a little jail downtown Detroit. I said, oh, shit. But they were like, that was like a five-year treatment program. And I was like, I was only 18. I was like, oh my God, like 5 years. Like, this is crazy. You know, like, what, you know, I thought AA, I thought the big book was like part of the court system, like as part of the punishment. And I had done a lot of hallucinogenics back then. And I remember that we had a dance, and you're on probation. So, like, after a half a year, you could attend the dances. I saw the lights in the gymnasium, and it was co-ed that night, and I asked my counselor, I go, hey, man, do I get my dose now? And he looked at me like, what? I go, yeah, you know, so I can go out there and have fun like the rest of people, like, you know, get dosed up and go. He goes, man, just get the fuck in there, man. You're not getting any acid. This is a rehab. But it was just crazy. That's where, like, sort of my head was at, but... And it went on like that throughout my life, you know, just bumming around the country, traveling around. Always obsession of mine on alcohol. I always thought I could get clean by myself. I never could. I could put a little time together. And I was always a pillar. I always kept opiate pills with me from my whole career, from the beginning to end. And sometimes I would think clean was just being, you know, like on hash and slamming some Roxy sets or Dilata. You know, I actually believed that I was clean, you know. And I would attend meetings like that, and, you know, I just didn't know. You had to be totally clean. But I only got like 10 minutes here, but sort of went on like that my whole life, you know, like I was a kind of alcoholic, and I'd wake up out of a blackout, and, you know, like, you know, I used to crash out in construction sites and, like, I fell like five stories down an elevator shaft, right? And I was with this other dude, and he brought me a half pint. And I pulled my head out of the rebar, drank that half pint, and I crawled to the Taco Bell in the barrio. And everybody knew me at that Taco Bell. I crawled through the drive-thru, and I looked up. I go, hey, man, you're going to have to, like, call me an ambulance. I go, oh, shit. So, you know, like, just shit like that. But, and then, you know, I got some serious charges on me. So, like, in 86, I was like, eh, man, maybe I should get clean. But I would attend meetings, like, on pills and weed and, you know, stuff like that. And never really got honest with myself. And I attended El Cerrito Fellowship, like, starting in 1986. And was, you know, I might have put up, like, maybe a year and a half together, but I was dirty most of the time. And I finally met a lady that I really liked. You know, I was like, wow. You know, usually I just walk away from relationships. I've left children behind because I was so mentally ill. My disease, there was no way I could raise children. You know, I tried, but it just never worked. The alcohol or the drugs would always raise its ugly head. So I hooked up with this lady, and she gave me so much unconditional love that, you know, she started beating down, getting that animal out of me, that, you know, just that desire to constantly drink and use. And still took some time. And finally, fast forward to 55 years old, I start getting, you know, consequences of, you know, physical stuff from drinking and drugging. And I ended up in ICU at Kaiser Hospital in 2007. And right about the same time I ended up in ICU, I had beginning of congestive heart failure, edema, pneumonia. I had staph infection, and I left the ICU once, and I went to Piedmont Avenue. I tried to, you know, fix up one more time, drink one more time, and my lungs, I couldn't even breathe. The air was actually killing me. So they found me, brought me back to ICU, and I went from ICU into MPI, and then MPI to a long-term program out in Concord. And so in 2007, with the help of AA, NA, therapists, all you people in AA, I managed to put together 11 years. And then in 2017, my wife died, which was, like, just terrible. I was like, oh, my God. And that was like, I was just in shock, man. And so as soon as she passed away, about 3 months after she passed, I was still going through it. And they started doing surgeries on me. I had a surgery. I did the opiates all right the first time. And then they gave me a second script. And then I just lost it. And I never got rid of Susan's hospice medication. And it was a ton of shit, you know. And so I went through all that. That was a good run. It went on for like 3 months. I just felt so disgusted with myself that I was doing her. This is after she passed, of course. And while she was alive, those drugs had no power over me at all. You know, everything was beautiful. People from the program came through the house. And I just felt so disgusted. I left myself down and her down. And I ended up back up in MPI. And I think it was like, was this 2018. So I went back in MPI 2018, went through it again. Got rid of, you know, all the shame, what I did and everything, and start, you know, going back to meetings and being with you people at MPI and in the rooms. It was the support. It was always the people helping picking me up that I needed. I tried so many times to do this alone, you know, like, you know, just I'd be laid up somewhere, like, just, like, isolated in a warehouse, just, like, alcohol, smack, crack, meth, you know. Like, come on. I thought I could do it alone, you know, start detoxing, but it never worked because I was so violently sick, you know. But it's just for the newcomer, if there's any newcomers out there, it's really a weed program. It's a 24-hour-a-day program. It's just for today. And, you know, support and being honest. Like, I wasn't honest about that hospice medication. You know, like, there was a kid in my group, and he was like, hey, you're still on that pain meds. Don't you think you should get off? And I was like the second weekend of the meds after the surgery. And I, as soon as the kid said that, I was like, well, fuck you, dude. You know, I'm finishing this shit, you know? And I quit going to meetings. So I didn't share with the group what was going on with me. I should have been more open and honest. And even with 11 years under my belt, I just wasn't, you know, honest. And so I think honesty is a really big part of the program. Like, that's why they always say more shall be revealed, you know, like shit we hide. It gets revealed eventually one way or the other. I think that's quite amazing how that works out in AA. And with this shut-in stuff here, you know, like God's doing for me what I can't do for myself, and trying to, you know, do stuff around the house, reaching out to people, still trying to do service. I'm still connected with MPI on Wednesday nights and help clients if they need to go to their car, or they need to go to their bank, or if they just want to talk. You know, listening is a big part of recovery, and I had to learn how to listen to people instead of like telling all my fucking war stories, like actually listen to somebody. So I've become a pretty good listener, try to keep my ego out of the way and let the person just talk, because they're just suffering and they're just going through it. So, you know, AA is like one of the greatest gifts ever bestowed to us. I don't know what we would do without AA. AA, like other people don't have anybody to call or stuff like that, especially with what's going on out there right now. And service is a big part of my recovery. Although I don't really like speaking, but I guess this is pretty cool because, I mean, this works for me. It's good. If I say no to speaking, then it just makes me weaker in recovery. And then I'm like hiding out in AA and I'm not participating. And I believe you really have to stay in the middle of the boat, never get out of the boat, you know. I used to think that was corny at first, but that's real. Once you get out of the boat, you start depending on yourself and not the group and your higher power. You somewhat tend to get lost and start believing the lies in your head. You know, like I just loved LSD so much that, you know, I really believe that it was okay to take LSD, you know, but a person like me who's addicted, it's not normal, you know, to dose all the time. And so that counselor told me that, I go, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, I understand, you know, I mean, you know, I can't do that. And it isn't the magic answer, because you still got to come down and then what, you know, but, so I've learned so much in AA, and I'm so grateful that Michelle gave me the chance here to talk. And has that been 10 minutes? They used to say methadone for losers and antabuse for quitters, but, you know, whatever. And is that getting close? I'm sorry, my shirt's a little scattered there, but I don't know, without AA, I don't know where I would have ended up at. It surely destroyed my drinking, because I was introduced to it so young, back in 1967. I was always resentful at AA because it destroyed my drinking, but it never destroyed the drug behavior. And I always found that quite confusing. But I'm just glad that I'm participating in AA, and thank you all. Thanks.
I'm Cynthia. I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say thank you to Michelle for asking me to speak. And thank you, John, for speaking as well. I heard when you said, you know, you don't turn down an AA request. So thank you for allowing me not to hide in AA, and allowing me to be of service and participate in my recovery. So, like I said earlier, I'm from Los Angeles. My home group is the Women's Primetime Meeting in Sherman Oaks. So that's in Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley. My sobriety date is February 12th, 2014. So I have a little over 6 years. Me and Michelle actually share the same sobriety date, which is kind of cool. And we always text each other. which is exciting, you know. We celebrate recovery in the rooms. I didn't hear that anyone was celebrating a milestone, but we're all sober today, and we're all sober in quarantine, so that's good. And I am grateful for AA. You know, it really did save my life, and I, you know, other people say it didn't. It gave me a life. I didn't have a life before AA. You know, I too was a young alcoholic, a teenager. I also did drugs, and I had no substantial life. You know, I had expected to die when I was young. I'm actually never actually had a legal drink either. I got sober 2 months before my 21st birthday. And, you know, like I had planned to, you know, just die out there like everyone else was dying. I didn't think that my life was worth anything. You know, like I was an eighth grade dropout. There was just so many things, you know, as a female, as a young female, you have to do things to survive out on the streets. And so that's what I did. I did anything and everything I could. And so with that came a lot of shame and self-hatred, and just like all the actions that I took and my disease showed me that I was unlovable. You know, but at the end of the day, it was the disease of alcoholism. It was, you know, this mind power disease. I was, you know, like addicted to a substance, and it made me put myself at risk. It made me lower my standards, my morals. You know, like I had none. Everything came for that sole purpose of whatever substance it was at that time. And, you know, I was tired. I was beaten into a state of reasonableness. You know, I for a second, I thought I wanted to go on to the bitter end, but it just got worse. I got introduced to AA as a teenager, you know, like to the concept of AA, but I made an honest attempt when I was like 18, and I had decided. And I got maybe like 3 months, and it may have been like the longest time I had ever had sober. And I had decided, no, like, this isn't for me. I'm just going to forget this. Well, you can't forget this. It's the seed is planted in, and it was there. And, you know, it was just hard. There was a lot of pain that I had to go through. It was of the hard knock variety. You know, I wanted to do things. I just wanted to blot out reality. And that's all I cared for. And I couldn't with the seed being planted, and I knew there was another way. There was essentially an easier, softer way, and I knew it, and I was tired. So when I got here, when I finally decided to stop, I ended up at this Christian program. It was like a free, like, woman's facility. And, you know, and I stayed for almost 6 months, and I'm a lesbian, and they don't approve of that, you know, but I was done. You know, and like I heard whatever they said, and it's just like I knew that I needed to be still. And like I know for a fact that that was grace working in my life, because I didn't run, because I didn't find excuses like, well, they believe this, so I'm gonna go. No, I was just done. Right before two, I had stopped. You know, my best friend, my first love, had died too, so that was also what tipped the scales. Like, in my mind, I just couldn't deal with it. There was just so much pain that had transpired in those 8-9 years of, you know, like I started when I was 12, 13, 13 really bad, you know? So within those years, it was just a lot to go through. And then I finally stopped, which I stopped, and I was tired and I was hurting, and I found a place to be still, and I had AA in my mind, and I had a few recovery people that I could reach out to, and like I got my feet planted, I got my home group, I got my women's meeting, because I couldn't be around men at that point in time. And for me, I didn't get that pink cloud that people get at first. And honestly, for me personally, I know that I needed it, because had it come so easy, I would have been gone once again. You know, like I'm an extremist, and you know, I was just a hardcore, crazy, you know, alcoholic. And I fought for my seat in AA. I had to sit on my hands, basically, sometimes. You know, I was in pain. My first birthday, my one of my thoughts that came to my mind is like, I should fucking kill myself. And like, it's not that I wasn't doing the work. It was just that there was a lot of trauma from all the past and all the guilt and surviving and all that, you know, there's a lot, there was a lot. And like, I don't know, but I just kept showing up. I kept, you know, working with my sponsor. I kept hanging out with my fellows and having that support to reach out to and being of service and hitting a million meetings, because that's what I needed to do then. And I say it and I say it. And then one day that thought that I didn't want to be here anymore, that I wanted to die, like, it eventually went away, and I can't tell you when. And it was somewhere between year one and two. And I thought that that thought would never go away. And so, like, for me, that was maybe just an experience of maybe, like, coming to believe, you know, like, or step three experience of being restored to sanity. Like, I had no control over that situation. I knew that I was doing my best, right? And in AA, it's like, you do the best you can. In my home group, we say, like, if you have 2% to give that day, give all of that 2%. You know, we say things like that, and it's like, okay, if that's all I have to give, then I'm going to give all of that, and that's okay, you know? And then that feeling went away eventually, and there's so many things that in my sobriety have morphed. I ended up going to school. I ended up transferring to UCSD. I ended up graduating with a bachelor's degree, and I'm an eighth grade dropout. So, like, I really did learn how to grow up in AA. I didn't have a life, you know. I developed relationships with women and men and got new mother figures, new father figures, you know. Like, this is a family, and, like, I have definitely utilized my network that I have. And, you know, I'm grateful that I have this, because, like, here we are in quarantine, and I am connected to so many people. I get to see people. This is a luxury that other people don't have. You know, they're stuck and they don't have access to this many people that will willingly go and talk about whatever they're going through, the crazy going on in their mind. You know, we have this, I don't know, we have free therapy, essentially. You know, we get to connect on a real level. We don't have to be ashamed or scared that someone's going to judge us, because we all understand. We all know where we come from. And in that, like, there's so much beauty in the unity of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'm really grateful for that. I have been in better places in my recovery. Like, I have been a better AA, so to speak, you know, but I know that I am where I'm supposed to be. You know, there's times when I've been sponsoring and I've been talking to my sponsor every day and doing this, this, and that, whatever. I have a better connection to God. I'm praying. What, you know, like, all of those things right now I don't necessarily have, but my life is good. You know, I am reaching out. I am showing up for little things. But honestly, I feel like right now, you know, like, and I don't have people dependents to take care of. So, like, I'm in a good place right now. I'm grateful for all these things that I can, you know, just basically get connected, get closer. Like, I am giving myself some routines, some, like, I have for this quarantine, it's been a struggle. My mom works at a grocery store, so it almost stresses me out sometimes when I decide to go down that rabbit hole. But at least I know today that it's a rabbit hole, because at the end of the day, like, I have no power. Lack of power is my dilemma, and I'm grateful for AA for teaching me that. You know, what I do have power is power over the thoughts I choose to go down. And so if I decide to stick to, oh my God, my mom works at a grocery store, quarantine, I don't know, weeks in, I was in a lot of fear earlier because I didn't like that I couldn't stop it. I had no power, you know, I had no control, and there was no way that I could protect my mother. But in reality, like, that's how it's always been. I, you know, like, I don't have that kind of power. I'm not, I'm a power. My disease is a power, but I don't have that type of power to change anything, to save anyone, to, you know, change circumstances. That's not me. I can only change my own circumstances. And I'm grateful that now in my quarantine, I have been doing a lot of things for myself. You know, all I can do is call and check in on my mom and call and check in on my siblings. And, you know, I'm just like, it's back to basics. And, you know, reach out to an alcoholic when I feel that anxiety or that fear. And, you know, just check in on them, ask them how they're doing. One of the ways I know when I'm in a good place is when I genuinely care to, like, hit up my friends or people I care about and see how they're doing and pray for them. You know, like, that's when I know that I'm connected to a power. That's when I know, like, things are going good for me. Because I'm like, in the present moment, and then I want to go and connect with other human beings and see what's going on with them. And when I want to pray for others, I know I'm in a good place. And when I'm sitting here consumed by myself and thinking about me and, like, all the what ifs, I'm not here. I'm not here in this moment. I'm not present. I'm not available for anyone. I'm not available for my girlfriend. I'll probably get in a fight with her when I'm, like, in those days, in those moments. And I'm grateful that I have a program of recovery to help balance me, to help check me, essentially, to help me back down, you know, because I find that I've had to back down a lot in this quarantine. I've had to realize that we're all going through this together. And so sometimes I want to fight with the people I live with, but, like, there's no peace of mind in that. That's not going to solve anything. Like, I need to have compassion is what I keep telling myself. I need to have compassion for everyone here because we're all going through it. And I may be better equipped to deal with it because I have AA, because I've been taught some spiritual principles, you know, and that's okay. I need to not hold it against them. You know, I need to not keep a scorecard. Because that is stealing my, that's taken away from my sanity, that's taken away from my peace of mind, and also just the peace in the environment that I'm in. And that's not what I want to be. That's not how I want to act. You know, I want to be of service to everyone, you know, and I want to use what I've been taught in AA. I have been taught so much in AA. I'm grateful for the life that I live, and I'm grateful to be in the situation that I'm in. And when I'm a little afraid, that's okay. When I'm a little anxious, that's okay. I need to learn how to not get mad at myself either for feeling human feelings, you know, like we're all experiencing our humanity at this point in time as well. And, you know, I'm just doing the best I can. I signed up for a class to do data analysis, which excites me, which I didn't have time because I was working, you know, 40 hours like everyone else. And, you know, now I have the time to do this, and it's actually pretty cool. So there's a lot of good things that are coming out of this quarantine for me. You know, and I can only wish that for everyone else, but I can also, the way I can contribute to anyone I engage with is just, you know, having some positivity and, you know, having a positive outlook on certain things. Try not to go down the rabbit hole because I don't want to bring other people into it, you know, but then again, I also do have, you know, someone, supportive people that will help bring me out if I do, because that's okay if I go down that. I think that this whole situation is crazy, and I don't know, but I've been sober and I came from crazy, and so in a way, like, I'm good, I'm okay, I'm gonna handle this, I'm gonna get through this just like anything else, you know, with my power that's greater than me. And, you know, and I have the support that we have out there. Just to get back to like my home group and what my home group talks about, we talk about alcoholism, ego, self, and steps 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, we have this format that helps us basically get us back, you know, to the present moment. To know that like alcoholism is a disease and it centers in our mind. And, you know, like I can be a prey to misery and confusion if I let it, you know? And sometimes I'm going to exacerbate the problem because I don't want to listen. I want to be, you know, like, I want to think I know what's happening. I want to think that I know what's the right way to do this. I want things to be done my way, you know? And that necessarily might not be God's will. You know, that might not be the right way to approach things. Like, there's times when I'm sitting here and I'm fighting with my partner, and then, like, I get annoyed and she gets annoyed and I shut down, right? And I shut down and I don't want to talk and it's hard for me. And I get quiet, so I do like silence. And so with my past as the character that I came in here with, that was one of my protective factors, you know? Like as a 12-year-old, I didn't have to speak in a home. I lived in a one-bedroom apartment and I didn't speak to someone in that home. I didn't speak to my stepdad, you know? So for years, it's like, you know, you're just quiet and you're silent, right? And so here, I revert to that old behavior in this fight. I go back there, but it causes me a lot of pain and it brings me back to that place. And I try, you know, like, and sometimes I have to reach out to other people and be like, yo, I'm doing this again. And I don't want to be like this because it feels uncomfortable. You know, the pain does eventually get moved and it gets me moving, but it moves me much faster. The pain, the little less pain moves me much faster now, which I'm grateful for, you know? And I'm trying to be a good person in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in everything. Right now, it's just easy to talk about quarantine and my partner because I'm with her like all the time. She's over there, so I'm gonna start whispering. No, but it's good. Today we did a virtual 6K marathon, which was awesome. So we participated in a virtual thing where we did it at our own location, did a 6K, and you know, I'm staying active, doing what I can because that's what I need. And then we submitted our results, so that was good. It gets tricky, you know? There's so much to say about AA. Sorry, I'm getting shy. I am grateful that, you know, I have a steady foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous, so that when I haven't been the best AA, so to speak, I haven't fallen, like, I don't think about drinking or drugging anymore. It's not really a thought that comes to mind, but what I do think about are, like, self-destructive behaviors in a way that are not beneficial to me. I'm also on the, like, almost completely not smoking train, you know, almost there. So right now, like, that's my main issue. I'm trying not to smoke. And then when I get upset, like, that's the easiest go-to, you know? But I'm trying also to end that, especially just like, I don't need that. I don't want that. I have also a lot of fear with like my future. Like I want to go to grad school to become a forensic psychologist. And I have like the admissions counselor is calling me and I, for whatever reason, I haven't been wanting to answer that phone. Like I haven't. Like, I want to do it, but I know that there's obvious fear that I need to address and that I need to speak out on. But really, what it does come down to is, like, when I had done my fourth step, it's like, you know, like, I think that I'm not going to make it, right? I think that I'm not good enough. And also in our home group, where you're like, what are the most repetitive thoughts? You know, and one of my most repetitive thoughts, it still comes and goes, but I think I'm not going to make it. And, you know, I have a fear of failure and I have a fear of success. You know, so you can't fail if you don't try. And then you can't succeed if you don't try either, right? But I want to move past that, and there's things that I need to do, and sometimes I just have to like sit down and just do it. Like, I have told myself for the last 2 weeks that I'm just gonna sit down and do it, and I'll sit there and I kind of, you know, will start and then I revert again. And it's these are my struggles today. They're not what they used to be, and it's great, you know, the road has definitely morphed and shifted into something better. But at the end of the day, I still tend to get in my own way, you know, and that's not necessarily where I want to be. And this is why, you know, like in AA, you say you have to find a power greater than yourself, you know, a power greater than yourself that will restore you to sanity. And when I said, like, back then, when I don't know when it happened, but I realized that I didn't have the wish to like die anymore, you know? And that was a moment of being restored to sanity for me. Or when I was in that Christian home and I was thinking about the loss of my best friend, you know? And that small voice told me that was the best thing I could do for her. You know, I didn't produce that, you know? And so that was a moment of me being restored to sanity, having that peace and comfort. Or like when I'm stressed out and I'm full crazy or whatever, I want to be mad or whatever's happening, and I look outside and it looks beautiful, whatever, the sunset is beautiful, something captures my eye and I'm taken out of my crazy and I feel that awe and wonder. And those are moments of me being restored to sanity. And I need to remember these moments. I need to remember that there is a power greater than me. You know, I need to remember that things are going to be okay. I need to remember that the good's going to come and the bad's going to come, but the good's going to come again, you know? And in that, in doing that, it's easier for me to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. You know, like, obviously with this whole school application thing, I haven't been able to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Like, I just, like, for whatever reason, I feel that I need to hold on to it. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not ready. I'm not in enough pain to just let that go. But also, I can't hold on too long because then the opportunity is going to pass. You know, and me as a student in general, I just needed a lot of pressure to complete deadlines. So maybe that's another issue. But that's okay. And I find that when I have turned over my will, things turn out way better than I have ever planned. I've turned my will over with so many things, like I never thought that I would, you know, become a UCSD graduate. Like, I never even knew about the UC schools, and I'm from Southern California. Like it's just not a thing. Turned over to God and just do what I need to do, you know. And I don't know, it's just every time I do, in the big book when it says that God is everything or he is nothing, I used to get upset. I'm like, what do you mean? I kind of took it offensively, but now I understand it's like God is everything when I just let it go. God is nothing when I'm holding on to it, you know, because I'm not allowing God the space to like do anything for me. You know, so I just got to keep trying to let it go. And then when I struggle, I need to remember those moments of grace and those moments of awe and wonder and like help myself come to believe, you know, that's important for me. And then when that doesn't work, call the friends that are going to call me out, because I need that for me personally. And be like, yo, what are you doing? You know, and sometimes I avoid those people because I'm not ready to get out of that space. But when I do, things go good. But thank you for letting me lead.